Bring on the third step. All yours, Sarah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. How's the sound so far? Okay? Everything's good? Okay. First of all, I want to thank Cynthia for asking me to be a part of this. Like, this is really an amazing experience to be a part of, especially on Mother's Day weekend. And, you know, I have so much gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous, especially on a weekend like this. So happy Mother's Day to all you mothers. And, you know, but I have so much gratitude because I'm here today and I'm a mother today because of Alcoholics Anonymous today. And to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope surrounding this work, and especially surrounding the third step where God came into my life having made this decision, right? And what happened as a result of making that decision I'm so grateful for the experience and to be able to do this. And I also want to thank, you know, Jeannie for her powerful talk on step one, and Anuwa on hers on step two. And thank you for breaking them down so beautifully and sharing your experience with those steps. I love that we all have, you know, maybe a different external experience when it comes to these steps, but internally, I think we all feel very much the same way. And my experience, well before I picked up a drink, was that feeling that the other speakers have been talking about, which was feeling that disconnect from God and other people, feeling afraid, feeling separate, feeling alone, and feeling less than. And that was the way I remember feeling as a little child, like well before I thought of a drink was even in my mind, well before I knew that alcohol could solve that problem for me, well before I knew that I was suffering from a spiritual malady and that I had this physical allergy and that I would experience this mental obsession when I started drinking and my alcoholism progressed. I didn't know that you know, what I was experiencing, but what I did know is that I hated the way I felt in my own skin. And that is the memory I always felt. Like, I was brought up in a wonderful family. I have amazing parents, and God was the center of that household. My father is a Presbyterian minister. He's retired now. My mother, she was a very devout, like, evangelical Christian at the time. And like, we were that type of family that prayed around the table every night at dinner. In fact, we would do this in public. So my first idea and conception of God was one that I was very ashamed of and I was embarrassed of. I was, you know, and so when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, people are praying and they're talking about God with such enthusiasm, I was in awe of that because I remember just constantly my whole life having this feeling of embarrassment and almost like secondhand embarrassment when I would see other people pray. For some reason, I thought that having a faith and a belief and a power greater than myself would, or a God, was something to be ashamed of or something to be embarrassed of just because of my upbringing. And another idea I got about God growing up was that this God was punishing. This God was, you know, I was on this reward punishment system. Like, if I'm a good girl, I will go to this beautiful place in the sky. And if I'm a bad girl, and I'm going to end up in this very dark, dark place, and I'm going to live there for eternity. And the problem is, from a very early age, I was exhibiting these behaviors because I would act out in ways to try to get out of that discomfort in my skin, get out of that feeling of being Sarah, right? So I would become a liar because all I wanted so badly was for people to like and accept me. And what I didn't know is that why I felt so uncomfortable and why I needed that validation so badly is because I was lacking this power in my life, that I was lacking a connection with God, and that I had all these things in front of me that were getting in the way of this having this connection, right? I had all this fear. I had all this anxiety. I had all this resentment and anger within me. Even as a little kid, I was embarrassed. I was just shame. That's all. I just constant shame. And I just, you know, I started to become this little liar because I want to be liked and accepted so badly. So I will tell you anything you want to hear to get you to like and accept me. So I'm already a liar. I already hate who I am. And now I'm going to this God and I'm in church on Sunday and I think, oh my God, like, I'm not worthy of this God and I'm probably going to end up in this dark place. So I'm even further removed from this idea of God, right? And, you know, I experienced the terrible trauma when I was at the age of 15. And I share about this not because I believe this is what made me an alcoholic. I know better today. I believed it for a very long time. But this is kind of what began my journey with, like, using alcohol as a solution. Like, I experienced the terrible rape and trauma at the hands of three men. And I was left beaten and broken in a hospital bed. And I was brought to the hospital. And my mother, this devout, very devout Christian woman, comes there and she takes one look at me broken in that hospital bed. And she said, how could you do this? How could you let this happen to me? How could you be so stupid? And like, it was in that moment, like, I already feel that sense of separateness and being alone and being frightened. And that when that happened, and the one person, the one human I thought was supposed to protect me and love me more than anyone else, I felt in my heart and my mind that she abandoned me. And I had had a drink here and there throughout my life, but it wasn't until after that event happened that I realized the effect that alcohol could produce for me. And it was like a spiritual experience. I put this in my body, and all of a sudden, all those awful feelings, that feeling of discomfort in my sober skin, it immediately went away. I experienced exactly what the big book talks about. You know, I experienced everything. All the fear and the shame and the guilt and all the thoughts in my head that would annihilate me every single day, it all went away. And the thoughts of wanting to die went away. And for the first time, I felt I could breathe. And for the first time, I felt connected to God's kids. And I could go be around other people, and I could laugh, and I could have fun. And in the beginning, alcohol was a blast because it was working for me. And I didn't know alcohol did something for me that it doesn't do for the normal person, that it shifts my perception of reality and makes it okay for me to be Sarah. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that for over two decades until I was beaten and broken down by alcohol. And I came crawling into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this was explained to me by another alcoholic. And you know, I really experienced this this disconnect from God and other people. And throughout my life, I prayed to God, even in my active alcoholism, right? I always prayed, but I always had this idea and conception of God that he was like Santa Claus, and it talks about it in the 12 and 12, but you know, I essentially am imposing my will on God, like, hey, God, do this for me, right? Fix this relationship, or make people like me, or give me this job. And that was my conception and idea of what a God was supposed to be. And basically what happens is I tell God what I want from him, then God doesn't deliver the way I want him to. And then I'm bitter, resentful, and I either believe God hates me or he just doesn't exist and the whole thing is just bullshit. And that's how my conception of God was for well over two decades in my active alcohol, in and out of my active alcoholism. So of course, before I even get to the point of being willing to make a decision, I have to be able to, I had to be beaten down, because I'm not willing, to be honest with you. And like, I don't really need to go over the first two steps because they were broken down so beautifully, but it's important for me to share that I couldn't get to make this. I couldn't make this decision without being thoroughly whooped in step one. And so what happened to me, and I'll tell you a little bit since I have some time about what happened to me on this, you know, in my drinking career. So it starts off in the beginning, and it's a disease of progression, right? And alcohol works, but it hasn't completely taken over my life at this point. I'm able to put alcohol down in the beginning if there's sufficient reason. So early on, when I got pregnant with my daughter at age 19, I was able to stop for those 9 months. And I don't know that I'm different from other my fellows, because during those 9 months, all I can think about is like, when can I get this kid out of me so I can go get a drink? Like, I was white knuckling it the entire time, and I was miserable, and I was depressed, and I was angry. And the second my daughter was born, I was chasing that sense of ease and comfort. So I didn't know that I was using alcohol to treat this spiritual malady within me, that I was using it as this power. I was using it as my spiritual solution at the time. I really was. And, you know, I was able, you know, the other speakers talked about it. I was able to, for, you know, act normally in certain areas of my life when I was able to put alcohol down. Early on, I was able to keep a job. I was able to keep a roof over my head, even though things were always changing. I was always, you know, losing jobs and needing a new place to live. And I was not a good mother, even though I would have told you I was, you know, by the time my daughter was 3 years old, and I was already divorced from my first husband, who, you know, from a marriage that lasted 10 months, you know, I didn't have the ability to take care of her anymore. And I went to my ex-husband and asked him for more money. And he wasn't having it anymore. And he took primary physical custody of our child. And then, of course, I feel what happens is God's abandoned me. But here's the truth. What I'm doing is I'm screaming out, I'm crying out to everybody, and I'm playing this victim, like, how dare he stole my child? I gave birth to her because I'm so selfish and self-centered. And that's what it talks about in our third step. It tells me what I suffer from doesn't come in a bottle. It's my selfishness and self-centeredness. It even says in our book, like, it, you know, that we must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It doesn't say that alcohol is going to kill me. Well, it will, because what I do is that I'm so selfish and self-centered. I create all this havoc in my life. I'm uncomfortable in my sober skin because I'm constantly thinking about myself. I'm constantly playing the victim. I'm constantly in these, you know, matching, I'm being the producer of confusion rather than harmony. I'm doing all of this stuff in my life. And then what I know will shut all that stuff down is a drink. And eventually that will kill me. But what I didn't realize is that my real problem was me. And I had to experience this over decades to find out that I'm the problem. I wanted it to be everybody else. I wanted it to be my ex-husband when he took my kid. But here's the reality. Out externally, I'm screaming to the world, oh my God, he did this to me. He took my kid. Internally, I'm saying, thank God, I don't have to take care of my child anymore because she's in the way and I can now drink the way I want to drink. That's what's going on in here. And then I'm so full of shame, I can't tell anybody that, because what kind of person am I? I don't want to be responsible for a three-year-old. So then alcohol starts dictating everything I do. It becomes my master, like the book talks about. I start moving to play. I moved to Manhattan because the bar stayed open until 5 a.m. I worked in the restaurant and bar industry because they didn't care if I came to work loaded. Everything I did, all my relationships were surrounded. Alcohol was the center of every relationship, every single one of them. And then I started to make men my higher power. I thought they were going to solve my problem. I thought the solution to my internal condition was going to be found outside of myself. So what I did was I found a husband at age 27. And this is how I found him. I go to a bar. We lock eyes across a crowded room. We go home together that night. 2 weeks later, we sign a lease. 1 month after that, he pulls out a 2-carat diamond. 6 months after that, we're on a beach in Jamaica getting married. Mind you, I've lied to him about every single thing in my entire life. I don't have custody of my first daughter. And here's what I do is I create all these problems over here. And then I think, well, let me start over here with this whole other situation. And I'm looking for all these human powers to solve what's wrong internally. And I can't figure out why it's not working. I can't figure out why if I tried to do all these things, I've tried to have the right job, the right number of children, the right house, the right, marriage. Maybe that'll make me like you guys. And it just never worked. Cause the second I put that drink down, the second I experience sobriety, I feel this restlessness, irritability, and discontentment. Although nobody told me those words. And I didn't have words to describe how I felt. I just hated it. And I would look around at other people who would be able to go to work and raise their children and do normal things, have conversations with each other. And I would be like, oh my God, how do they do that sober? How do they do that? Because I'm so full of fear. The second I open my mouth, and I'm so full of self, that every time I open my mouth, I'm worried about what I'm going to say, if I'm going to look stupid, what you're thinking about me. So I'm so fear driven. And the one thing that'll shut that down is a drink. And I don't realize that I am making this my God, and I'm making all these external things my higher power. And, so I marry this man and that I've lied to. And then I get pregnant with this child 6 months later. And then my disease progresses. And it does talk in our book that that at a certain time, for reasons yet obscure, most alcoholics have lost the power of choice when it comes to a drink. And that I didn't know that because I get pregnant with my son, right? And I got pregnant before I got pregnant with my son. I had a miscarriage that was caused by the mistake of a hospital. And I came home from having that horrible miscarriage. They gave me the wrong medication. They admitted they were at fault. And I remember sitting in the living room and my husband's pacing back and forth and he's so full of anger and rage. And he's like, I'm going to sue this doctor. I'm going to sue this hospital. And I'm just so full of fear. He can't leave. I have to fix this. My higher power is going to leave. And what is the only thing my insane alcoholic head can think of is let me get pregnant again. And so I immediately get pregnant and something breaks inside of me. And I don't even realize I've reached a point in my drinking where I've lost all power of choice when it comes to a drink. And I can't breathe a sober breath during this entire pregnancy. And not only that, I don't want to be pregnant with this child. I have no connection to this baby inside of me. I'm in the darkest, most separate place up until that point that I'd ever experienced. And I just want to die every single day. And I can't tell another living soul because I'm so full of guilt and shame. What kind of mother doesn't want her own child? What kind of mother doesn't want her baby? And I'm in this deep, dark place. And my husband starts to see the truth of who we actually married. And I end up in psych wards because I've become a danger to myself and the baby inside of me. And as a direct result of everything I did during that pregnancy, my son's born 3 months premature. And the first time I lay eyes on him, he's in an incubator in a NICU and he can't breathe on his own. And I take one look at my child and I fall in love with him and I want to be a mother so badly. And like, this is where, you know, it was explained to me in the third step, and I needed to hear these things. I needed to hear that I didn't have the choice to be different, because I really just thought I was a piece of shit. And it tells me in the book that like many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we want to. And I wanted so badly to live up to these things. I wanted to be a good mother. I wanted to be a good daughter. I wanted to be a good wife and sister, and I didn't have the power to do it. I was the kind of mother who nodded out and dropped her son on the floor. I would leave my kid in the hot car to go drink. I didn't have the power, and I didn't know it. And the problem is like, I experienced this shame and guilt for the things I'm doing. And the only thing that'll shut up the shame and guilt in my head is a drink. The only thing that quiets that is a drink. And I don't realize that there's another solution out there, that if I am able to make this decision, that will produce the same effect. Because I eluded that. I stayed away from that God idea for as long as I possibly could, because I, you know, it tells us in our second step about being faced with these two alternatives, right? Go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. And like, when I finally hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, when my son was 6 years old, and you know, my second husband's, you know, we're divorced and he's remarried, and my son's being raised by another woman and he's calling her mom. And I've been in and out of my children's lives. I've been in and out of treatment facilities. I've been, you know, on my deathbed with heart infections and, you know, all of these things. And I finally end up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, not because I really liked what was going on here, or like I was attracted to anything. I essentially got paroled into Alcoholics Anonymous. But I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and people are talking about this idea of God, and they're offering me spiritual help. And I don't want that. I want my help to come in the form of a human power. I want a boyfriend to fix me. I want a job to fix me. So what do? You know, after spending 6 years in and out of my children's lives, you know, in and out of treatment centers, in and out of detoxes, repeatedly getting separated from alcohol over and over and over again, making those firm resolutions, but never a decision, never a decision. I get separated time and time again. I go to detox. I meet the love of my life in, you know, in group, and we sign out AMA and grab our trash bags and move into his parents' basement and end up as co-defendants. Or I go to rehab and I do the exact same thing. Or I end up going to jail after a while because there's consequences to the things I do to get the next one. And what happens is I get separated from alcohol and I'm as sober as I'm ever going to be. And then they open up the gates and I make all these resolutions. Like, I'm going to get out. I'm going to be a good mother. I'm going to get my kids back. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to be a drug and alcohol counselor, all these great ideas. And then guess what? They open the door, they let me out, and I drink, and I have no idea why. And I don't know that I don't have the power, and I need another power, and that the power is not going to come in the form of a human. And it doesn't matter if that human is my child. I can't rely on that human to fix me. It's never going to work. But I still keep trying. And then I come into AA being offered this spiritual help, and I reject it. So I don't do any of the work. I get a sponsor in name only. I look at the steps on the wall and be like, yeah, maybe I'll do that one, but not that one. And no way am I doing that one. And I'm not talking about God. And I'm going to be, you know, and I'll raise my hand and I will tell you about my day, and I'll get a boyfriend and I'll work at a diner and I'll flirt with dirty old men and I'll stack up a wad of bills in my sock drawer and I'll dress up the outside. And when my 90 days in the halfway house are up, I'm out. I don't need AA anymore. I've got supervised visitation with my kids. I'm doing great. I have an apartment. But then the inevitable happens and something happens, right? And it's like, people always say life shows up. Here's the thing. Life's always been there. I eventually, like, I try to show up for life and I can't do it. And what happens is my six-year-old little boy and I are at my daughter's lacrosse game, and he looks at me and he says, you know, you're not my real mom. Kim's my real mom because she takes care of me every day and you just gave birth to me. And I experience that pain in my gut, and I don't know what to do about it. And I know the one thing in the world that will remove that sense, that pain from me, is a drink. And what happens then is the inevitable. I pick up a drink, allergy kicks in, pick up one, a year and a half later, I cannot stop. I can't. And there's no human power big enough. There's no froth emotional appeal. It doesn't matter that there's warrants out for my arrest, eviction notices on my door. And it doesn't matter that I'm supposed to show up for court And if I don't show up for court, I'm going to probably lose all rights to my son for the rest of my life. And I still can't stop. And when I finally came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and this woman explained to me that I didn't even have the power to choose, that at that point I had placed myself beyond human aid, it was the biggest relief I'd ever heard in my entire life. Because I would have died trying to drink away the guilt and shame of what I did. I would have killed myself to try to be rid of that guilt and shame of what I did to my children. I didn't want to breathe a second sober because I knew what I was doing to the people I loved, and I couldn't stop it at that point. And the problem is that didn't happen. Like, that pain isn't enough. External consequences aren't enough to get me willing to make this decision. They're just not. In fact, I love how Bill talks about the mind being a marvelous mechanism and how he was able to endure all this external torture for a really long time. And that is my truth. Listen, I can endure a lot of really bad shit on the outside. I can endure marriage loss, relationship loss, home loss, the loss of my children, incarceration. I can endure all of that and still keep going because the idea of being sober is so awful to me. It's that awful. But, you know, it's finally when the internal gets to be bad enough. And here's what happened. Here's what happened is, like, a decade later after I have this experience, or maybe, I don't know if it was a decade, but it was several years later after my son is, you know, I basically walked out of my son's life because I can't show up for court. I've abandoned my children. I'm in and out of jail. My life gets worse and worse externally. And I end up in a recovery house. And I end up back in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, not by choice. And again, I'm offered those two choices. Go on to the bitter end, Sarah. You know, it's still waiting out there for you. You can go have a drink. Or we have this really cool solution here, but it requires some honesty and it requires you making a decision. And again, I don't know what decision they're talking about. But if it has to do with God, I'm good. And so what I did was I found another solution. He lived at another local recovery house. He was an aspiring rap artist in his mind. And we moved in together 2 weeks later and we started drinking together. And that was the beginning of the end. That was the beginning of my last run. And I'll tell you, like, I never experienced brokenness like that in my entire life. I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for so many years, and I'm so grateful to all of you amazing people because, you know, our traditions talk about the only requirement for membership being a desire to stop. Guess what? I didn't even have the desire to stop, and nobody ever judged me for that. Nobody ever questioned what I was doing in the seat, and thank you for that because I didn't have a desire to stop drinking. I had a desire for the consequences to stop. I had a desire to stop burning my life to the ground. I had a desire to stop hurting my mom and dad and my children. I didn't have a desire to be sober because that was too painful. That desire didn't come until my last night of drinking. While I was on the highway, I'd done a commando crawl across the room I was running with this guy to sneak out around 3 or 4 in the morning to go get a drink. And I'm in the car and I'm on the highway. And I cried out to God for the first time in my life. And it was not like the God, it wasn't the Santa Claus God. It wasn't the, hey God, like, fix this for me, do this for me. This was my prayer. And I'm sorry if this offends anyone, but my prayer was simply, dear God, please fucking kill me or stop me, please. And I screamed it over and over and over again, begging God to end my life or stop me from what I was doing. Because for the first time in my life, I had the most overwhelming, overpowering desire to turn my car around and go home and not do what I was doing. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't stop myself. And I experienced for the first time, not only that powerless, but the need for a power bigger than myself. And God showed up in the form of law enforcement, which isn't always like the best way or the way I'd prefer him to show up, but he showed up and I got locked up 12 hours later. And what happens is I get separated from alcohol again. And I'm thinking, you know, I have that moment where I, like, again, God's will, Sarah's will, like, Sarah's will is you separate me from alcohol, but please give me a cushy detox bed and make it comfortable and help me reconnect immediately with my family. Well, none of those things happen because what happens is I get locked up and at this point I've accumulated 11 felonies, right? That's what my drinking has led me. That's the actions my drinking led me to do. But I get locked up on this little retail theft. So I'm thinking in Sarah's head, all right, God, you know, I get it. You stopped me. I'm a little bit relieved right now. I kind of feel like you answered my prayer, but here's how insidious pride and ego are. within hours, while the alcohol is leaving my system, the fear of being found, yeah, all of these things start to happen immediately. Sarah's will wants to go back into action. And I pick up the phone and I'm like, I got to call this person. I got to call this person. I got to find a way to get myself out of the jam I got myself in. I don't actually want to deal with these consequences. I had this amazing, beautiful experience of being utterly broken. And 2 hours, 3 hours later, it's completely gone, right? That's how insidious this is, right? And so that, you know, I kind of surrender a little and I'm like, okay, all right, this can't be that bad. Maybe I'll get a couple weeks, you know, in county. And that's not what happened. God stood me in front of a judge and she sentenced me to 1 to 3 years to the state correctional facility. And I went to state prison. And for 18 months, I lived sober without a solution in my life. And I was a monster. I was an absolute monster. And that's when I really, truly experienced what it talks about in our third step, wanting to be the actor who wants to run the whole show and forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery. All I want to do is tell other people what they need to do for me. And I don't realize I'm stepping on the toes of my fellows. And I wonder why everybody's hanging up on me, why nobody wants anything to do with me, because I'm calling home on my parents' dime, on the money that they put on my phone account. I'm telling them what they need to do, how they need to be better people. I'm writing long 4 or 5 page apology letters home about how sorry I am, but maybe if you were better siblings or parents, I wouldn't be here. Oh, and PS, I need commissary money, so send me that. And I had no conception of what I truly suffered from. No idea. But look, everything I experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous has been in hindsight. And when I was sat down with a sponsor and she started to explain to me about this selfishness and self-centeredness, because here's the funny thing. I came into AA thinking, what are you talking about? I'm not selfish. I'll do anything for anybody. But what I find out having an experience with the 12 steps is that I've literally never done anything for anybody in my entire life without some underlying motive in it for me, even if it was just to get you to like me better. So I go through this 18 months of being separated from alcohol and just being this selfish and self-centered actor running the whole show, stepping on everybody's toes and having everybody angry with me. And I get out of prison and I still have all these old ideas. Sarah's will is still alive and well. And I still believe at this point you would think that I had been broken enough by that last night. But no, the beautiful thing about self-will is it will crush me sober just as badly as it crushes me when I'm drinking. And now what it does when it crushes me sober is it pushes me into God. Thank God for that. And it's because that's absolutely God's grace, because I honestly don't even know why, how I'm still here 8 years later, because there have been so many times where I have run into a brick wall and created this self-imposed crisis, and I've gone back on my knees to God again. And what happened is I get out of jail, run on self-will. I'm going to reconnect with a rap star ex-boyfriend. We're going to move into this couples recovery house. I'm going to avoid the parole officer, all these fantastic ideas. And within a week, every single idea, every self-willed idea that I had got smashed in front of me, and I'm left completely broken, completely broken, curled up on the floor in the fetal position for a week and not knowing what's wrong with me. And thank God for that brokenness, because this is the most beautiful place in the world to be. I didn't know it at the time, because it doesn't feel beautiful when you're in it. It never feels beautiful when God is working on you. That, like, I didn't know what spiritual growth felt like. I didn't know what spirituality felt like until I finally got sober this last time around. That it doesn't look pretty. It looks like, you know, sobbing on the floor and crying out to God. And that's what happened. And God showed up in the most beautiful way. And I experienced my second step through seeing God in another human being, walking up to the steps of my old home group, the Greater Northeast Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and seeing God in another alcoholic, not another alcoholic who I didn't know, you know, who I just had to take their word for it, that they used to be really bad. Because I see happy, joyous, and free people all over the place, but I just think you're all full of shit, or you didn't drink like me, or you didn't suffer like I did. But these people, I knew they drank like me because I drank with them. Some of them had even been homeless and couldn't get a day, but they were in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were carrying around this blue book, and they were talking about God openly, and they were helping other people, and they were lit up. Like, I could see the light in their eyes, and I knew in my heart, like, something was working here. And I trusted that enough to be willing to finally make that decision, to finally accept that spiritual help, because I was so broken. I didn't have one idea left in me, not a single one. I am so grateful for that. I am so incredibly grateful, because if I just have one idea left, I'm not making that decision. I'm not. If I still think I can solve my own problem, there's no place for God to do it for me. And the interesting thing about God is, like, and it talks about this in the 12 and 12 too, I can absolutely believe there's a God, because I don't know that there was ever a period in my life that I truly didn't believe God existed. The only problem is God and I drank together. Because I'll be sitting there out in the streets drinking and being like, okay, God, please do this for me. A belief in God for me wasn't enough. So the decision, and I didn't know what that meant at the time, because all I'm doing is I'm in a recovery house and I'm thinking I'm so smart, but I'm getting on my knees and I'm saying this prayer with this woman who I really have nothing externally in common with. All I know is that I know that she knows how I feel right now, and that she drank like I drank, and that she has a solution, and I want to feel like she feels now. So when she tells me to pray, I pray and I get on my knees and I start saying this prayer: God, I offer myself to thee, to do with me as thou wilt, relieve me of the bondage of self. And I'm like, what are we talking about? And at that time, those words meant nothing to me, because I felt uncomfortable. All those old embarrassments and old wounds and all those discomfort about praying. Like, we're kneeling on the floor of a recovery house holding hands together with a bunch of girls behind us screaming about who stole my cigarettes. And I'm like, I don't get where God is in any of this. I don't get it. But what I did know is I was so broken. I was willing to do whatever this woman told me. And I didn't realize in that moment what decision I was actually making. And that was the decision to just go through with the rest of the 12 steps. Because it tells us right after that beautiful prayer, although this decision is a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in me that are blocking me from God. And all these other steps to go through with. And I didn't know, like, that's all I was doing at that point. Remind you, that prayer has taken on such new meaning for me now that I know those beautiful words, like that I'm offering my life to this God, this power that I used to shun, that I used to be embarrassed of, that I used to be ashamed of, that I'm asking God to relieve me of my biggest enemy, which is me. The number one thing that blocks me and binds me up, that keeps me from connecting with you, it's me. It's always been me. And when I clear away the things that are blocking me from that, and I won't get into that because those are other steps for other people to delve into, but all I know is that my decision is simply this, and this is a decision I can make every single morning of my life, is to continue doing this work, because my prayers alone are not enough. Faith without works is dead. I've been praying my whole life and sitting on my ass and expecting things to show up for me. There is work to be done here. And I didn't feel relief, and I didn't feel God. I hear people talking about getting on their knees and saying this prayer and having like a white light experience. That wasn't my experience. I felt awkward and uncomfortable. What happened is the white light experience shows up little by slowly when I start taking the directions that are outlined, that follow, all the actions that follow, gave me that connection with God, gave me that experience with God, and continue to give me that experience with God. And when I choose to make this decision, and that is the one area I do get to choose. Am I going to take the action or am I not going to take the action? I don't ever get to choose if I drink or not. I've placed myself beyond human aid when it comes to that. I don't have the power. There's really nothing. The choice I get to make is, am I willing to do the work or am I not going to do the work? And that's really where my third step, like, that's the most powerful thing about my third step today. And, you know, the prayer is this beautiful prayer that asks me, you know, to take away my difficulties, not to make my life more comfortable, not to make it easier for me. Get me through these things that I go through, the trials and tribulations, the trials and low spots that are certain that show up in my life. Get me through them, and not to make everything easy, but to show God's kids how God's power, how I can walk through these things, how I can, you know, experience things like the death of my sister in sobriety, and how I can not only not pick up a drink, but I can show up and stand next to my mother, the woman I hated my entire life, through a thorough amends process, and able to stand next to this woman and be the person who got to stand next to her in the precise moment she saw her firstborn child in a casket for the first time, and comfort her and make it about my parents who were burying their child and her children who were burying their mother. That's what happens. God doesn't bring my sister back, but he walks me through this. so I can show others that this works. Like, I never thought in my entire life I'd be able to stay sober through something that painful, but it wasn't even a thought, not even for a second. And what happens is when I remove Sarah from the equation, it's never a thought. That's been the miracle of it. I just have to like do this work constantly and consistently to remove me out of the way, because I'm the problem. I'm always the problem. And all the other steps help me see that I'm the problem, and the solution is to less Sarah, more God, less Sarah, more others. And every single time I get to that place, I experience that sense of ease and comfort that used to come with a drink. I experience it with God now. And that's an absolute miracle. And here's the thing, I have screwed this up royally. Coming up on 4 years sober, I had gotten into a relationship with somebody when I had gone about 9 months after I went through my steps, and we moved in together, and that man picked up and he couldn't stop because he suffered from exactly what I suffered from. And here's what starts to happen. At almost 4 years sober, I start to think I'm God again. And I don't even realize it. That's how subtle this thing works. I'll turn my will and my life over to the power of God as I understand him for me. But God, I've got him, and I become totally agnostic in that relationship, and I don't trust and rely on this power, and I start to get sick again, and I start to manage and control my life, and I start to become dishonest because I'm afraid you're judging me, and I start to become resentful, and I'm running around and I'm sponsoring the world, and I'm not going to God. I'm relying on the human power, because here's the problem. I'm an effect girl, and I can find anything to produce an effect. And I know this may not be a popular opinion, but if I'm running around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous sponsoring everybody and their mother, and I'm just running from what's going on internally, I'm not transmitting anything. And I'm just using people in Alcoholics and newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous to make me feel better. And I start to suffer spiritually. And that's exactly what I was doing. There was no God. And then what happens is when there's no God, what am I giving to these women? I get annoyed when they call me because it's not coming from a place of love. It's coming from a place of ego. And I start to lose this connection with God. And thank God that my experience and God's grace have led me to when I'm finally in enough pain, and when I'm finally beaten down hard enough by my self-imposed crises, which in this case was the relationship, I'm finally willing to get on my knees again and go to God. And in that third step prayer and our other beautiful prayers, our seventh step prayer, and go to God and ask for willingness in sixth step and say things like, God, please give me the willingness to stop clinging to this relationship. And I ask and I ask and I ask, and all of a sudden God does for me what I cannot do for myself, because that's what these steps are about. It's about absolute humility. And I can't be humble if I'm trying to manage my life, or I'm trying to force people to be what I want them to be, because that's all I wanted. I didn't want this man to be sober for me, for him. I wanted him to be sober for me. I want to deny him. Like, I'm so selfish and self-centered. I don't realize. I think I'm doing all these beautiful things to help him. And this is how sick my alcoholism can be. Like, I have this beautiful moment of brokenness. It talks in our third step that we were reborn. It's a promise. It's a promise given to us in our third step. I got to be reborn in that moment where God broke me wide open with all that pain. And what do I want to do to another one of God's kids? Prevent them from having that brokenness, because I think I know better. I think I know better than God. And I can do it in any area of my life. When my daughter's in pain, the first thing I want to do is fix it and make it better for her, because I don't trust that God will use this pain the same way he used my pain to bring me closer to him. And then by getting in the way of her experience, I might be denying her a closer relationship with God. And this is the difficult journey about not only making the decision to do the work, but really trusting that when I remove my hands from a situation and keep my hands out of a situation, the outcome is always so much better. Here's the problem. I like to cling to things until they're so painful, and then God's got to pry them out of my hands. And then when I'm finally like, all right, God, you can have it, then I get to experience the relief and the miracle that comes behind it. And that's happened with jobs. That's happened with relationships. All of these things have happened in my sobriety. I cling to these things that I believe I want so badly, that I desire them so badly, because I think I need this, or I think I have to have this. And what I don't realize is the miracle comes when I let go. The freedom comes when I let go and I trust God completely. I abandon myself utterly to this power. Those are such powerful words. Abandon myself utterly. Abandon me. No more Sarah. get out of the way. God, use me. That's what our third step prayer is saying. Use me, God. Help me, fix me so I can help your kids. Because I can't show up as me. I can't sponsor women as Sarah. I'm not useful to God. If I'm so bound up with self and I'm so caught up in the drama in my head that I can't hear a word you're saying, how am I useful? How am I useful? I'll just project all my stuff onto you and then I'll walk away and tell you how and try to be a life coach and tell you how to live your life. You know, I did that in early sobriety and it was a disaster. And these poor, I had to make amends sober, which is, by the way, the worst thing ever. I hate sober amends. Anyway, but it's like, this is the life I get to lead today when God is at the reins, when it's not Sarah running the show. And I just want to share a little bit about what my life is today because I don't want you to think it's all sadness and shitty relationships and dead sisters. Like, that's not, like, it's a miracle that I've been able to walk through those painful situations sober, but I also get so much beauty when Sarah gets out of the way, right? So I get to live this beautiful life. Like, I didn't trust God in the beginning. You know, I struggled trusting God with the job situation. I'm an 11-time felon. Who's ever going to hire an 11-time felon, right? Like, how could, and then guess what happens when I just get out of my own way and I just show up for life, you know, and I just do what the people suggest in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I keep trusting and I keep just taking the action, doing the work and keeping my hands out of situations. Well, now I am an 11-time felon who works in a law firm. I'm an 11-time felon who is a notary public for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and was sworn in the same courthouse where I was sentenced to state prison. I didn't do that. There's no way I did that. That's God. And there's no one who can tell me there isn't a power greater than me when I see and I witness the miracles that go on like that. I get to live in a beautiful home with my best friend and six cats. I have a great credit score because I did all the action that was followed in the 12 steps, all those beautiful promises that continue to show up by making that one decision, which was continue on with the rest of the steps, has led to all of this. Because if I didn't make the decision, none of that stuff would have happened. Did I go out again? Somebody just said they were having trouble hearing me. I don't know. and bigger and better than all the material stuff that I get to have in my life is that I have relationships in my life that I never dreamed of having. You know, God shows up and he works through me and all of those things that I talked about, you know, about God transforming me and God using me through the third step prayer. Well, he's been doing that. And I don't even realize he's doing that except when I get a phone call from my mother or my sister, because I have a brother who suffers from this disease. And they say to me, how can we help him? What do you think we should say to him? What do you think we should do here? And that's an absolute miracle, because I was the low bottom drunk that didn't get invited to her own son's baptism. They lied about the date so I wouldn't show up. And now I'm getting calls from family members telling me, asking me how to help my brother, or asking, you know, my sister asked me how she should talk to her ex-husband, because they get to see the transformative power of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, I don't say that from a place of ego, because it doesn't have anything to do with me. On any given day, and I have friends on here who can attest to this, I am an absolute shit show, and they read my inventories and my nightly reviews, and they know how full of self and full of fear I can become on any given day. It is a daily reprieve. That's it. I get today. And I didn't understand what I get today means. I thought it was like one day at a time, I'm just gonna stay sober. And like, that idea made me want to kill myself. But one day at a time, if I get up and I make this decision to practice these principles in all my affairs, I experience this beauty of this life. I experience having my daughter, who's my best friend in the entire world, who should by all rights hate my guts, who does not. I get to experience that today. I get to experience sitting in front of another woman and taking her through the 12 steps and watch her regain custody of her children. And I get to watch her light up, and I get to watch her help another woman, and I get to watch that woman help another woman. And there's a ripple effect that is so much bigger than me. All I do is show up and be a vessel for God and get out of my own way. Less Sarah, more others, more God. And all of a sudden miracles happen. And then the most beautiful things happen. Like, I get to gain acceptance of things that I otherwise may never have accepted through this third step and through this power. I have a son I have not seen in 13 years now. I tried to make an amends to him. His parents aren't willing to hear it. He's not willing to hear it. And you know, I won't really get into the whole amends thing, but I will say that I did make an approach and they are not, you know, I've made more than one approach. They are not willing to hear it. And that's okay. And without having this, having made this decision and having gone through this work and having had this experience or thinking that this is a human reliant program, if I just went and to a bunch of different people who were going to tell me, you know, what their opinion was about what I should do, because a lot of people had opinions and they're well-meaning people. Like, you never fully lost rights to your son. You still have rights, get a lawyer, do this. Instead of doing that, I did exactly what our literature tells us to do, which was go to God and ask God for an intuitive thought or answer and get like a decision. And I kept praying. And this third step prayer was such a huge thing for me, because what is God's will in this situation? Because is it God's will for me to bang on this poor boy's boy at the door after I've torn through his life and made promises for so many years that I couldn't keep while I left him to be raised by another woman? Who do I really show up and do that? And with the help of a sponsor and with even more so the connection to this God, I went to God over and over again and I asked God what to do about the situation. And, you know, and I have conversations. I have a relationship with God today where I have it out with God. I'm like, God, show me what to do. I don't know what to do. Like, I miss my son. I don't know what he looks like. Show me what I should do. And God showed me 3 years ago. I was on Instagram. I typed in his name and I saw my son's face for the first time in a decade because he had a girlfriend who made a joke Instagram account. And I had a sense of peace come over me, unlike anything I'd ever experienced. A sense of knowing in my heart. And that is where God resides, in my heart, as long as I'm out of the way. And I knew in my heart that it was going to be okay. Not on my time, on God's time. And that's the power of this work. That's the power of making that decision. It's a miracle, because everything in my life was always like, all my sobriety was always contingent on something outside of me. If the husband leaves, I can't stay sober. If somebody I love dies, there's no way I can get and stay sober. If I don't get my kids back, there's no way. Chapter 7 says otherwise. Let no alcoholic say he cannot fully recover unless he has his entire family back. It simply isn't so. And all of this is a result of making that one decision, the way that I'm able to sleep at night, the way I'm able to look the world in the eye, the way I'm able to accept the fact that my son isn't my life, the way I'm able to be a mother today, the way I'm able to be a daughter today, a sister today, the way I'm able to love and forgive and show up and be a friend and all these, and an employee, the way I'm able to live a life of purpose and gratitude today. All of that is based on one decision. I accepted spiritual help. And that led to this life of freedom. I haven't thought about a drink in longer than I can remember. And it led to this place of peace that I get to experience every single day I choose to make that decision. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate all of you. Love.